Welcome and breathe in air. Abstract Illusions Radio, the show that explores and exposes the many aspects of expression, with your host, Jennifer Hellman. Good evening, everyone. This is Jennifer Hellman, and this is AIR. I want to thank you so much for listening. This is our first broadcast, and yes, we are live. You can actually call in today. And with this, the guests I have, you probably will want to. Sandra Engelman is an MA who is a licensed therapist and the author of numerous books, including How to Heal Toxic Thoughts, Soul Retrieval, and Medicine for the Earth, How to Transform Personal and
Personal and Environmental Toxins.
Thank you so much, Sandra.
Yeah.
She is the author of several lecture programs produced by Sound True, and she lives in New Mexico, and you can find her online at sandraengelman.com. There is a link on BBS Radio, Abstract Illusions page. Please check it out. She's got some awesome information on there. Today we're going to be talking about a few things. So, Sandra, thank you very much for being on AIR.
Yeah, I'm happy to. Thank you.
I am very familiar with your work through your soul retrieval.
Uh-huh.
And so let's talk a little bit about soul retrievals, how you even got into all of this.
Sure, absolutely. Well, I was always a spiritual child, and then I grew up in the 60s and turned to drugs and all those things that we were doing back then. And had three near-death experiences in my life, and always had a lot of visions and prophetic dreams. But I never had a structure for how to work with my spirituality. And while I was going for my master's in counseling psychology at a graduate school, I took a course on shamanism. And just fell in love with it. And what I really loved about shamanism was it gave me a structure. It gave me a form to work with all my spirituality. And shamanism is, as far as we know, the most ancient spiritual practice known to humankind. From the anthropological evidence, we know it dates back at least 40,000 years, but it's suspected that the practice itself dates back over 100,000 years. And shamans are people who go into an altered state of consciousness and in that state meet up with helping, compassionate spirits who kind of act like what we would call guardian angels. And shamans are also responsible for making sure that there's harmony between the environment and the people, and really staying connected to nature and the nature spirits. So I got into it actually while I was studying counseling psychology. It was a surprise to me that I was going to fall in love with it, and that was on Halloween of 1980, and here I am. It's 2010.
Time really flew, didn't it?
Yeah.
Now, how does a person know that, you know, something's going on? For me, just so you have an idea about me,
okay.
I did study shamanism. I'm very familiar with it. I very much connect with the animal energy and with nature. And I've had some terrific, wonderful visits with animals. They're wonderful teachers for me and for many people. Now, you do soul retrievals. You are known for teaching classes on how you can get certified in shamanism and soul retrievals. How does somebody know that they need a soul retrieval?
Well, basically, from a shamanic point of view, whenever we suffer, an emotional or physical trauma, there's the possibility that a piece of our soul, and the definition of soul that I'm using, it's our essence, it's our life force, it's our vitality. A piece of that essence flees in order to survive the experience. So in our culture, things that could cause soul loss would be emotional, physical, sexual abuse, being in a war, being in an accident, having surgery, divorce, death of a loved one. Anything that causes shock in our life could cause soul loss. And when I was doing research for my book on soul retrieval, what I found is that just about all shamanic cultures around the world believe that illness was due to the loss of the soul. And the symptoms of soul loss are dissociation, where we feel somewhat out of our body, observing life as if it's a movie, post-traumatic stress syndrome, addictions. If we're not feeling filled up with our life force, we might turn to substances or work or relationships or gathering material objects to feel filled up. Immune deficiency problems could be soul loss, emotional depression, suicidal tendencies. Anybody who ever says the words to me, "I've never been the same since," and they don't mean that in a good way, could show that a person is dealing with soul loss. In psychology, we oftentimes talk about dissociation, but in psychology, we don't talk about what dissociates and where that what dissociates goes to. In shamanism, we talk about that it's a piece of the soul that flees the body in order to survive the experience, and then it's the role of the shaman to bring that soul back. The example that I give all the time, because it's so clear, is if I'm going to be on a head-on car collision, the very last place that I want to be at the point of impact is in my body. My psyche couldn't handle that kind of impact, that kind of trauma. So our psyches have this brilliant self-protect mechanism. We go away while the trauma is occurring. The issue is, from a shamanic point of view, most of the time that part of ourselves doesn't come back on its own. In our culture, because we have so many traumas that occur, some parts have to come back on their own. But from a shamanic point of view, we've had great success. I've trained thousands of students in soul retrieval. I don't certify people because the spirits really are the ones to certify you. It's not in my hands to do that. But I train people, collect lots and lots of case studies, and we've had really wonderful results in bridging soul retrieval and shamanic healing into our culture, dealing with modern day problems today.
Now, one question, as you were saying all that, what's the difference then between the inner child and the soul? Are they interconnected, or are they just separate parts within the whole?
Well, you know, it's kind of a languaging thing, and part of the challenge in teaching shamanism today is there are so many spiritual traditions and trying to figure out, you know, where the crossover of languaging in. Inner child is a psychological term of getting in touch with an aspect of ourselves. Soul is actually our essence, and it's an invisible part of ourselves that actually doesn't have a personality, so that when you bring back a part of an essence, it's light that fills a person up with light. It's not like chatting with a five-year-old part of yourself where you're trying to understand something that has happened in your life.
Now, is it possible for an individual to bring that part of their soul that decided to leave, is it possible for them to bring it back themselves, or is it best to have some assistance in doing that?
Well, you know, of course, that's the most common question as I've been lecturing on soul retrieval since the late 1980s. Everybody wants to know, can I do my own soul retrieval? And it's always worth a try. In shamanism, we're really dependent on results. Results were everything. If a shaman couldn't heal the people in his community or her community, then the people died. And so what I tell people is, if you want to do try and call your own soul parts back, that's fine. But if your problem isn't being alleviated, if your symptoms aren't being alleviated, then you have to seek out the help of somebody else. In shamanism, in classical traditional shamanism, it was the fact that another person was willing to intervene in the spiritual realms on your behalf was where a lot of the power was. In today's world, a lot of our focus is on self-healing, and there's nothing wrong with that. We all have the power to bring a tremendous amount of healing into our lives again, but we want to track the results. We want to make sure we're feeling better if we do that kind of work for ourselves.
Very well stated. Now, I'm going to kind of switch gears a little bit, because you have this wonderful new book, How to Thrive in Changing Times, which I think it's all kind of interconnected in so many ways. And this is a wonderful book, and I think it's very timely that we have this book because of all the shifting energies and the very trying times that we have right now.
Yeah, it's true. Well, my focus has been, one of my passions has been, a lot, everybody knows me for soul retrieval in the shamanic community, and I also did a tremendous amount of writing on reversing environmental pollution using spiritual methods. And a lot of the key part, one of the themes of How to Thrive in Changing Times, is the power that we have if we would actually collect our energies together as a global community, how we could really shift what's happening on the planet right now.
So, what motivated you then to write this book? It was just a continuing aspects of what your passion is, or what really got you going, saying we really need to have a, because a lot of this is very simple ways of practicing and doing rituals,
right,
of clearing and dissolving beliefs and aspects of you that aren't working.
Well, basically, in shamanism and all spiritual practices, we're taught that thoughts are things. And in a modern-day culture, we don't recognize the power of our thoughts. We don't recognize the power of our words because they're invisible. We can't see them. But in indigenous cultures and all spiritual traditions, it's understood that thoughts are things. And so ever since I was a child, I mean, this has been a lifelong passion for me, is really looking at how we do create, how we are spirits that came into this world to create physical form. And I really feel that somewhere or other in our culture, and this has been going on for thousands of years, we've been using our thoughts to create a tremendous amount of chaos and a tremendous amount of destruction. And so a lot of people are writing about the power of what we can do as far as manifesting a better life for ourselves. And my interest is, yes, let's manifest a better life for ourselves, but how about if we join our hearts and our minds together and use the ancient principles that go back for thousands of years about what we could do with our thoughts and words if we join together as a global community to do that. And one of the things that we know from shamanic healing, and I've seen this over and over again in the workshops that I teach on medicine for the earth, reversing environmental pollution, is that there's a big difference in what one person can do on their own versus when a group comes together and focuses healing on an individual or on a place. And, just look at Haiti right now. I know that people are really distraught. It's tragic to watch what's going on there. And how about us joining all of our hearts together to see the people in Haiti in their light as spiritual beings and in their strength? Because what we tend to do as a culture is we tend to pity people. And the example that I use all the time is, if I had a problem, I wouldn't want millions of people pitying me. I would want millions of people saying, you're strong, you can do it, we're behind you, go. And so, we really have to shift as a global community our focus on looking at what's wrong and pitying other people who we feel are suffering right now, to really bringing more light back onto the planet. And that takes self-examination of, number one, looking at our train of thoughts and really examining, are our train of thoughts bringing us to our desired outcome? And what are those really deep core beliefs that we started to develop as children that tell us we don't deserve anything good or bad things will always happen? How do we dissolve those beliefs and start to work with aligning our thoughts with our desired goals?
And your book really gives some wonderful example, and I love the fact that you use the elements and use the different elements to show the different ways of doing these practices to really connect with each part. Now, are you saying with this, and I'm saying this generally because some people may not have read this wonderful book yet, are you saying it's best to do something for each element to really clear it and change your thoughts on all levels?
Well, when you're talking about the elements, let me clarify that for people who might be listening. I really love nature, and nature has an amazing ability to cleanse. So when we're talking about elements, we're actually talking about water, air, earth, and fire. And different people are attracted to working with different elements. So, like, I wouldn't do a fire ceremony to dissolve a belief with somebody who's afraid of fire. I would try and find out what's their favorite element. So, you know, if somebody says, oh, I love air, so, you know, get some bubbles that you get in a toy store. Go outside and blow some of what you're trying to let go of, but don't dump it into the air. We're not trying to dump more pollutants into the air. Actually blow what you're trying to let go of, but seeing it being transformed to an energy of light and love, so that's what's going out into the airwaves. Or doing something of bathing yourself, of washing your hands and letting a disappointment or some block being transformed into light and love. Again, we never want to actually put pain and suffering into an element, because we're trying to evolve past dumping things into the elements like we do in the physical world when we want to get rid of it. And here we are in a world filled with toxins, burying it into the earth and seeing it being transformed into love or light, or looking at a candle or making something that can be burnt and transformed in the fire. So I like to show people how they can use the elements in a cleansing fashion to help them release certain things, and that the elements can work with us in partnership. And when we learn how to truly honor and respect earth, air, water, fire, which give us life, we would have no life without them, I think that things will start to move more into a place of balance and harmony on the planet again, because we're not respecting the elements that give us life.
No, we really aren't. And it's always amazing when I go for a walk, as you suggest in here, as a walk in gratitude, and just really feel the essence of the plants and the ground and the rocks and the animals that are nearby. I just that's one of my favorite things to do, actually, and it was nice to see it in writing as a suggestion. Mm-hmm. Is there any other ways, in your view, that humans can really show more gratitude than greed when it comes to nature, in the sense of giving back to nature? In what ways do you suggest?
Well, from a shamanic point of view, there's two important principles that come into play here. One is that in shamanism, it's believed that everything is alive and has a spirit. So air is alive, water is alive, the earth is alive, the sun is alive, the moon is alive, the stars are alive. And in shamanism, we talk about what quantum physicists talk about as the unified field. And in shamanism, we talk about it as a web of life, that there's a web of mm-hmm. life that connects everything. And so where we are earth, air, water, fire. We are all the elements. We are part of nature. We're not disconnected from nature. Every action that we take towards nature affects the entire web of life. And so there's an interrelatedness. There's not a separateness. And mm-hmm. that perception of separateness is what's creating so much illness on the planet today. And so I always say, let's keep it simple. You know, when you take a bath or shower, wash your hands, wash your dishes, give thanks to water. When you drink it, give thanks for all the life that it's giving to you. When you breathe air, give thanks for the life. There, you would have no life without air. And look at what we do as a culture. We dump chemicals into the air.
Yes.
And if we shift our perception of it, who would dump chemicals into something that gives you life? The earth is constantly giving us what we need. The sun is such a teacher of unconditional giving, because the sun does give and give and give. And I think a great practice to do, and one of the practices that I've been actually adding to my life, is waking up in the morning and giving thanks for my life without asking for anything. Like, I'm grateful for, instead of doing that, just saying, I'm grateful for my life, period.
Yeah.
Because you know, life is precious, you know, it's really precious.
It's a very awesome thing to do, and it actually brings, you know, the more you give out in gratitude, the more it comes back to you. At least that's been my experience. So it's that balance of giving and receiving.
Yes. And also, you know, one of the things that I keep writing about and wrote about in How to Thrive in Changing Times is we want to give love, but we also have to be able to absorb that love back from the earth, air, the sun, and water, mm-hmm. because there's a cycle. And giving and receiving is all one cycle. And we're taught that giving is better than receiving. But if you think about for yourself, if you give a gift to another person and they can't receive it, they feel awkward in receiving it, you feel weird because you were so excited about giving this gift, and for somebody to feel like, I don't deserve it, makes you feel kind of funny, makes you feel kind of awkward. And nature is the same way. Yes, we give love to nature for all it gives to us and our connection to all of life, but to be able to receive love back again from nature is a really powerful teaching that a lot of us need to learn, because we're a little bit unbalanced in that.
Oh, a little?
I think
that's a huge imbalance.
It's huge. And it causes, you know, I'm a licensed psychotherapist and have done a tremendous amount of research on cancer and different ways of working with people. And people, you know, who give all the time and don't know how to receive oftentimes end up with an illness, coming down with an illness.
And draining their energy to the nth degree. And
right.
I will say, I was one of those people, but I learned my lesson.
Oh, good, good.
And literally, I gave to my detriment in many aspects of my life. So it was a good hard lesson for me, but I'm very open to receive, and it's a lot of fun. And I do want to open up the phone lines, and if you have any questions for Sandra, please call in. The number is 888-815-9756. We are talking to Sharma about thriving in the changing times and shamanic practices. And I think a lot of people, at least what I'm feeling and knowing and observing, is a lot of people are going back to the basics, like shamanism, to have a deeper appreciation of life.
Yeah, it's a deeper appreciation for life. It's also, shamanism is a way of accessing our own inner knowing, our own intuition. And I think that, you know, what you see in troubled times and challenging times, or at least what I observe, is you have a part of the population who wants to give their power away. Okay, mommy, daddy, whoever's out there, tell me what to do. And then there's a part of the population who is drawn to finding their own inner guidance, their own inner wisdom. And I think that's why one of the reasons there's such a resurgence in shamanism today is a desire to reconnect with nature and also to be able to get our own personal wisdom, to tap into our own creative brilliance. And one of the things, I finally went to go see Avatar on Saturday. I don't know if you saw it yet. And, you know, I was kind of, didn't really want to go. I thought it was going to be just a Hollywood event. But the message that really came through was the importance of connecting again in nature and what happens when we don't. And people came away with, you know, when you really kind of listen to what people came away with, they came away with, I want to live a simpler life, you know, like was shown on this movie. I want to reconnect. And they also talked about, one of the themes of the movie was also group consciousness, of group working together. And I know one of the friends, my husband and I went with a friend, and he said, I want to find a group to work with, you know, which is so much of the point of my book and all my work of what we could do together as a global community. So shamanism has a lot to offer us right now, and it's not, you know, people say, oh, it's a primitive system. But the fact that shamanism is still so powerful today and so popular today shows its ability, the ability of the practice itself to evolve throughout time and be practical for people in our culture to deal with the needs of our time.
And it's... I have studied it for many, many years, and I think I will always be studying. I don't think I will ever, I'm working towards the mastery, and I have in some sense, but it just really has, I mean, I look at a tree and I can see its energy and I can see what it's giving. And I really appreciate, you know, giving that tree a hug and saying thank you for being here.
And shamanism is a life path. That's one of the things that I teach in my workshops when I teach students about shamanism. Shamanism isn't about methods. It's not about techniques. It's an actual consciousness of how we live our life in a moment-to-moment place. And so it's a work that's always evolving. We never quite get there. Every time you think you have an understanding about something, a new doorway opens up. And I had the great opportunity back in the 90s, early 90s, to work with a shaman from Siberia. And he was in his 90s when I met him, and he was introduced to shamanism. He was a shaman, was initiated into shamanism when he was 17 years old, and he still called himself a baby in the work. And so, you know, I always try and get my students to have some compassion for themselves of, you know, they think they're not getting it fast enough, but it really is a life path, and it's a place that a true shaman never calls themselves a shaman. It's your community that calls yourself a shaman, because it's always a work in progress.
Yes, and we do have Christina is online too. Hello, Christina.
Hello.
Thank you so much for calling. What's your question today?
Oh, thanks for opening the lines up. The conversation about soul retrieval, when you said that it has no personality, before you even mentioned that, I was thinking, well, that's how a person feels when they receive the Holy Spirit, mm-hmm. when they get filled up with the Word, and they feel complete.
Right.
Is that the same?
It's exactly the same. Yeah, exactly the same. Because soul is light, and so, you know, the Holy Spirit is light, and so whatever words you want to use or whatever experience mm-hmm. that you want to use.
Well, when you described it, that's mm-hmm. exactly what I thought of. I go, well, that's how I felt when I received the Holy Spirit.
Yeah, yeah, that's perfect. Uh-huh.
So the soul retrieval that I received was the Holy Spirit?
Sounds like it to me, because you felt like you were really filled up, right?
Yeah. And then prior to that, before that, I was lost, disconnected,
mm-hmm.
depressed, suicidal, confused, like a pinball machine,
mm-hmm.
not going anywhere but bouncing off the walls.
Yeah.
And always lost.
Right.
So I just... And then when you said that the shaman never really says they're a shaman,
mm-hmm.
I found that interesting, too.
It's not wanting to brag about your power.
Because it's not your power.
It's not your power. Exactly. You got it.
Okay.
A shaman is the metaphor that they use in the literature. Is the shaman is a hollow bone, is an empty reed, where the shaman brings through the power of the universe, or what you would call the Holy Spirit, or God, or the goddess, or the creator, you know, whatever words go
yeah.
with a person's religion. They're just a vehicle for the work. It's not them that's doing the
now,
work.
Now, I'm going to jump back about 2 decades ago. I was in a charismatic church, and they were talking about these children that were coming in to our now that basically were going to be born with the Spirit. And then 15 years later, I met some people who have indigo, crystal, and rainbow children. And then I just kind of like stopped in my tracks going, whoa, wait a minute, I know these children.
Mm-hmm.
I heard about these children in church.
Right.
And,
yeah. Well, when you think about the evolution of consciousness, and every generation that comes in with a new evolution, and you look at the challenges that we're facing on the planet today with illness and environmental problems, the children who are being born today are already coming in with the knowledge of how to create solutions for the problems that we have. So we're seeing a different level of psychic ability that's coming in, and it goes along with evolution.
Now, I think the problem is a lot of the adults aren't willing to listen to these kids who do have a solution.
They're putting on drugs. They're being put on drugs, unfortunately.
Well, it's just different. Let's just use it as an example of different brewing pots, because in the charismatic community, they are encouraged.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, these children are laying on hands, praying in tongues, performing miracles. And then in the New Age pot, these children are encouraged
mm-hmm.
to, you know, develop their intuition and seek their higher power, etc. And then you have the traditional parent who's going to the school psychologist, and then that child is being given medication to focus and
right.
not drift off
right.
or
yeah.
get distracted.
Yes.
And there's an article on children who are autistic children
mm-hmm.
that I was reading it on the internet. The mother said that these children are superior beings.
Mm-hmm.
What do you have on that?
Well, autism is a complex issue, and In shamanism, we don't treat labels. We look at individuals. And so it's really kind of hard to put all these kids into one pot, as using the metaphor that you...
I really respect that.
But there is... They're very sensitive. You know, they're very sensitive, and there's different levels of sensitivities that are going on. And a lot of them have been impacted, again, by environmental issues. So, you know, there's been a great deal of success just through diet alone being able to help to bring more harmony and balance into their lives and to help with some of the sensitivities.
Nice.
Now, I have multiple sclerosis, and I've had it for decades. It was just diagnosed 10 years ago, but I had it for decades before ever being diagnosed. And when I was wandering around, if you want to call it wandering around in the desert, I would go to the doctors and everything would check out, and I would just walk around confused. Mm-hmm. So is that part of being detached from soul?
Well, in shamanism, we all go through, and this is life, we all go through different life's initiations to open us up to a different level of consciousness. And I can't say that the MS, again, because in the work that I do, you are an individual, not somebody mm-hmm. who would be classified as having MS, and so I'd have to look at you as an individual. But it sounds like that experience for you actually created a doorway. It created what we call a little death. You know, we go through all these little deaths in life before we go through the big death at the end that helps to create change and transformation in our lives. And it sounds like that diagnosis for you brought you into a good place in your life right now.
Well, I know that when I'm going through an exasperation and I'll share it with Jennifer, she'll just kind of like key into it and she'll say, no, you're downloading.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And, so I never know if I'm downloading or if I'm exasperating or if the two are one, but then I just honor it.
Good, yeah. And learning how to breathe, find your center, go inside yourself, and, you know, light heals. And as each and every one of us can learn how to really drop deep inside of ourselves and tap into that internal light and to let that flow through us, that's a true way for healing to happen. And that's one of the things that I really focused on in my new book.
And you can get your book where at?
Well, the easiest way to get it is on Amazon, but of course you can order it in any bookstore.
Which would you prefer?
Whichever way works for you is fine. I'm happy that the information is going out into the world, and whatever mm-hmm. way people choose to get it, that's really great. So I have on my website, sandraingerman.com, I do have a link into Amazon. And also, you know, if getting it through your local bookstore and getting them to order it is a great way to get them to bring a few more copies into the book, into the stores. So
okay. That's
a good way to go.
I've got a Barnes & Noble a half mile from me. So.
Oh, good. Great.
I can easily request that.
Great.
Thank you so much. And,
good luck with everything.
On Abstract Illusion. I'm very intrigued by you.
Thanks, Christina.
All right. Thanks, Jennifer.
Thank you. Have a good evening. And just so people do know, I do also have a link on the Abstract Illusions page on BBS Radio for getting it on Amazon. So if you're on there, you can just click on the link and get the book, and I do highly recommend it. Your writing style is just, it really invites you in, and that's what I really appreciate with all of your books.
Yeah, I have a simple vocabulary, and I'm not saying that to put myself down. It's in a positive way. It's something that I know in my teachings and in my writings that I'm able to take spiritual terminology and make it very accessible to people. So recently somebody told me that they're actually very, very conservative and close-minded, and that they found the book very easy to read and were able to work with the practices and actually wanted to read some more of my book. So that was good. That was great feedback to get.
Yes, and it really is. All the practices, all the exercises are just very easy to follow and just very well written. And are you doing anything with this, like in like a DVD or anything more visual to, or a workshop that goes with this?
Well, I actually have been doing a couple of workshops to go with some of the work called Working in Community, Thriving and Changing Times. And I haven't done a DVD, although different opportunities always are. The book literally just came out a few weeks ago, so different opportunities usually start to open up for me after my work does come out. But I do have a monthly column called the Transmutation News, and I have not missed one month, actually, since 1997.
Wow.
It's unbelievable. It's been a real commitment. And it's a free column, and it's translated into 8 languages, so people around the world read it. And basically, the point of a lot of my work, of How to Thrive in Changing Times and some of my other books, is that where we have the power to create change right now is by the spiritual work that we do. Because most of us feel overwhelmed by the challenges of the world, and the spiritual practices that we do make a difference, and that's been a teaching for thousands of years. So since 1997, every month, I really try to keep people inspired. And I write about different practices, and actually How to Thrive in Changing Times came out of some of my monthly columns. And then we do ceremony together every full moon, where we experience ourselves going within and finding our own light and letting that light connect with the light of thousands of others and creating a web of light throughout the earth, and also doing some healing work of perceiving all of us in the global community working in behalf of all of life, being empowered and vibrant and healthy. And so that's a place where people can kind of come in. I write it every month, and it is on sandraingerman.com. And it's a way to, because it's very easy when we watch the news to fall off a spiritual path. Oh, it doesn't work, or what was I thinking, or this, it's all too big. And it's really important for all of us to stay inspired, because it really is our thoughts and the words that we're using throughout the day that is either going to bring our planet to a really good place or for it to spiral down. And so I really want to keep people inspired to work together and to work with spiritual practices to be positive, conscious change makers on the planet.
Now, you mentioned something, our ceremony for the full moon. Do you have any suggestions for tomorrow's new moon that is with an eclipse?
Well, basically what I tell people is the full moon has been a place where people can remember to do the work, but we really should be creating a web of light every day. You know, we should be seeing ourselves doing it every day. So it's definitely something to do on the new moon in the eclipse. And when the blue moon came about, I sent out a broadcast email to everybody on my email list asking us to really see ourselves joining our hearts together and just spreading love, just absolute love for all of life throughout the earth, and that would be a beautiful thing for us to do also on the new moon and the eclipse.
Yes, and with all the planets lining up, joining of the hearts is absolutely perfect thing to do to really help heal what's going on these days.
Yeah. And the other part of that is we have to remember to receive the love that we're sending out to.
Yes.
It goes back to that conversation we were having.
Yes. So, now, yeah. You know, is there anything, you know, there's a lot of prophecies with the doom and the gloom for the planet.
Right.
How do you become such an optimist?
Well, I have different viewpoints on this. Number one, my helping spirits that I meet in my shamanic journeys keep on encouraging me that our future is based on our present. So the future, really, you can't predict the future because it's really based on the present. And when I was a young child, I really had a vision of the beauty of life and the joy that we all should be experiencing together on the planet, and the abundance we should all be experiencing, and the health and the light and peace. And I made a real decision when I was very young that I wasn't going to give up in this lifetime. Even if it doesn't work, even if the collective decides to move into a different place, I am not going to give up. And I really believe in every cell of my being, the ancient teachings, that everything is being created from within us. There's nothing that's just happening outside of us. The old traditions of as above, so below, as within, so without. Our outer world is purely a reflection of our inner state of consciousness. If you want to change the outer world, then change your inner state.
Mm-hmm.
And so basically, that's where we have power right now. We have tremendous power right now to really transmute, transform some of our negative states of consciousness and to tap into our spiritual light. Because we talk about body, mind, and spirit in this culture. You take away the body, you take away the mind, and we're just pure spirit. And as we get in touch with that spiritual light, as the religious teachings, the spiritual teachings have been asking us to do for eons now, we can create change. And what's happening, if you think of how much energy is being put into the doom and gloom prophecies, wherever your energy is going, that's where you're going to end up manifesting, because again, it's being created through you. So trying to reach as many people as possible and educate people that if you don't want to see those doom and gloom prophecies manifest, which we don't have to, there's no reason that they have to manifest, then you have to change what you're thinking about, and you have to change the words that you use throughout the day to create a different desired result.
Yes, and just like you said, be very conscious of what you're saying. And if you start saying something that is kind of negative, switch it immediately.
Right, replace that thought with something positive. One of the things I was saying in a class that I was teaching recently on the subject was, think about when something's not working for you in your life, how much energy you put into that. You know, you talk about it all day long, you think about it all day long, and so you keep that energy, keeps riding. If we would learn how to take all the energy that we put into what we don't like in our lives into what we do want to see in our lives for ourselves and for the planet, there would be no choice but to be successful, because that much energy would be feeding a desired outcome.
A very wonderful way of putting it. And I do want to say we have a couple more minutes left. Is there any other final thoughts, any workshops that are coming up, any talks that you're doing that you would like to mention now?
Well, I'm taking care of my 95-year-old parents these days, so I'm staying pretty close to Santa Fe. But I do have my training schedule on sandraingerman.com. And I just really want to encourage people, if they want to check out my transmutation news, because it is free, and it is a way for us to really focus our spiritual practices together, because that really is where we have the power right now to create change.
Most definitely. And again, the book is called How to Thrive in Changing Times, Simple Tools to Create True Health, Wealth, Peace, and Joy for Yourself and the Earth. So, Sandra Engelman, I thank you very much. www.sandraengelman.com is her website. Again, there is a link on bbsradio.com, Abstract Illusion. If you go there, there is a link for her website and also to purchase the book. I highly recommend it. It has some great, great suggestions and great information, insights. So I thank you very much.
Well, thanks, Jennifer. Thanks for all the light that you're spreading on the planet right now, too.
I appreciate you saying that, and your work has really helped me evolve in my spiritual practice, and I really appreciate all your work you've done throughout the years.
Well, lots of love to you. Many blessings.
Many blessings and much love to you. And with that, this is Jennifer Hellman saying, until next time, with each breath of air, gain new insights and inspirations. Many blessings and good night.